Okay. So recently on my Facebook, a pre-med student got a hold of me and was like, hey, I was researching med students that have OCD and your name came up and I wanted to say, I really appreciate you sharing your story. And also, do you have any advice for somebody who's going into medicine? How do you, you know, get through it all? How do you not be super perfectionism all the time with your OCD? Although I don't consider myself a perfectionist, but you know, how do you deal with that? So I just wanted to say, I like that. So I actually referred him to your podcast and told him that on your podcast there's all sorts of med students talking about various things. So
super cool. So yeah. Wait, did he find you through a different medium besides my podcast? You've done some blogging, right?
Yeah, so PNW published one of my blogs, and so
yeah,
basically what happened is I think if you go on Google and put medical student plus OCD, like my blog comes up, I'm pretty sure. Yeah,
that's
yeah,
super cool. Yeah,
that's
and it's nice and how you've, it's like, nice how done, you've it. Like
done it.
A little echo. Hold on.
A little echo. Hold on.
We'll see if it keeps working.
We'll see if it keeps working.
Okay.
Cool how you've done.
Cool how you've done.
Sorry, it's. Let me see if I can restart this. Hold on. If I might end it and then come right back.
That's totally fine.
Okay. Wait. Now I didn't hear it. Okay, I'll edit that out. It's fine. It's cool how you've been sharing your story in different mediums is what I'm trying to say. Like through writing and then also through like a listening medium like this. Like that's great. I've had similar experiences and it's just like, I think one of the greatest satisfactions I've had as a journey as a medical student thus far.
It is nice because also it's kind of funny, Dr. Amity from our school, she'll refer me students as well who are like, hey, can I give your email address to a student who's dealing with X, Y, and Z? That's happened at least like 3 times. And so it's just, I think it's really cool to be part of this kind of community of people who are feeling vulnerable to talk about things. Because it's important because we all go through it, you know, to a certain extent, like, you know, like your children's book, like we all have something, you know?
Well, and I think it makes it easier, you know, eventually, of course, to other medical students, it makes it easier for us to talk to, but I really hope that also translates to our patients. Like I had a long conversation today with the attending I was working with, you know, kind of about self-disclosure and like when to disclose, how to disclose, you know, you could go on ad nauseum about that stuff. But I really just think at the end of the day, like if we're doing it for the patient's best interest to talk about like our issues, I think it can help make us come off as more human. Like, hey, like taking meds is not fun. Like, I know this is like an extremely painful experience you're going through, and I don't know exactly what it's like, but I've gone through something too.
Yeah, actually just this week. So I'm on my ER rotation and we had a patient who came in and they have other issues going on, but one of the main diagnoses was OCD. And they were coming in for a suicide attempt and just the mom was like, man, they have all these intrusive thoughts. And I was like, I could tell you a thing or two about intrusive thoughts. And so it was just interesting to talk to them, and their future goals actually were to become an optometrist. And so I was like, okay, well, you can do it. This has been my experience, but you know, you got to find your own way through it and you have to be the one to figure it all out. But there is help and hope. You don't have to be perfect to be a physician.
Yeah, no, that's super cool. That's super cool. Well, you know, Megan, I love how whenever you come on the podcast, we just dive in. This is Megan.
Yeah.
This is now your third episode with the podcast. For the listeners, you were on episode 2, episode 24. And you've openly talked about your ADHD and OCD, and you know, I've been good friends with you now since when did we start? 2017.
Yeah,
it feels so long ago. We were so innocent and naive, and now look at us, we're months away from graduating medical school. It's terrifying.
Yeah, it is terrifying. And you know, I guess we'll be doing this again in a couple more years when we've been residents for a couple of years and how that has affected us as well.
Yeah. Yeah. the mental health journey of every step. And you know, I guess throughout really at the entirety of our career, we were saying right before we got on that one thing we wanted to talk about tonight is kind of like the chronic nature of mental illness, and it ebbs and flows with time. And you know, we both are going to talk about kind of our depression this evening and how it manifests in different ways. You know, but either way, yeah, Megan, thanks again for coming back on the show. Numero tres.
Yes. Well, thanks for having me. I was your first guest.
Yes. Yes. The infamous first guest. I mean, it's so cool. I think you're number like, I think 80 now, 80th episode, something like that.
I've been impressed with how much you've gone with this. I mean, I didn't have as many, you know, listens as Neelu's did. So I get that.
Dude, you got to step your game up. This is number three. You got your shot.
I know.
But yeah, I mean, it's kind of been my goal the whole time with this podcast is just to try to just keep doing it. And because I get sometimes, at least when I started a YouTube channel years ago, even before the podcast, I got a little too obsessed with the numbers. You know, the first video that I posted, like a lot of people saw it. And I almost just kept trying to create videos with this sense of trying to create that again, trying to create that lots of views, because that's what I thought that kind of validation that I needed was at that young time in my life. But then I realized what really brings me the most gratitude is like situations that you just described, where you do get that email or that message and it's like, damn, like, okay, all this work like actually is having an impact. Like, okay, this is super cool. Like, I don't care how many people listen to it. Like, whatever, if I just keep continuing to do this one thing, I think it's going to steadily grow, and that's what I care about, and just like trying to help people in a, hopefully in a legitimate way.
Well, and I know for me, I like listening to your podcast when I drive, and you know, I might have been months since I actually talked to you, but hearing your voice and on the podcast with whoever else, usually it's another classmate, it just brings a smile to my face to know that, like, you know, that support is out there in that community. And then also, I mean, I know I've talked about your podcast to several patients, actually, as a going into family medicine. You know, there's a fair amount of psych in family medicine. And so I know that's something I've done. I was like, hey, I have a buddy in med school who has bipolar disorder. He has this podcast. I have found it really useful, something you can check out. And people, you know, will tell me, they'll check it out. And it's nice because you do have those different options for ADHD, Graves' disease, PTSD. So like if somebody has a specific thing that they've been dealing with, they can look into it. So I know that it's kind of a fun thing to share with my patients and also like co-applicants for residency or residents that I'm working with or even attendings or social workers actually that I've worked with on my rotations. I was like, yeah, it's a thing that we've really kind of worked on at our school. And so anyway, it's really neat. And then it's cool when you get those things and you're like, wow, somewhere I'm helping somebody and I didn't even know it. So.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's, you know, I do kind of feel the podcast that I've been trying to do, you know, I couldn't have done it without the help of our classmates. And it really did kind of give me the, you know, the inspiration and the confidence that it's like, okay, yeah, like this actually, like people do want to talk openly, like I have done in the past about their experiences. And it's just been, yeah, I mean, it's been great. It's like, out of my medical school experience, you know, passing all these tests and, you know, jumping through these hoops, these interviews, whatever, like I can step away and say, like, one of the things I'm most proud of at medical school is like, you know, meeting people like you and starting this podcast. Like it's really, I feel like I'm starting residency with just like such a different thing that I'm also trying to do simultaneously. And I think it's going to help give me a balance in life. You know, it's hopefully, I say this now, you know, maybe it'll be harder as a resident a year from now by any means, but, you know, just try to approach psychiatry in a different way. I was talking with a psychiatrist and, you know, I'd love to be curious about your thoughts and even maybe the listeners, you know, when they think about this. Hosting a podcast isn't free, right? You know, there is money that I have to put into this to get these files online, to get distributed to the phones and whatever other devices people use to listen on. It's a cost. So I run ads on the podcast. So when I meet a potential patient who reminds me somewhat similar of you in a sense, where this person has ADHD and maybe also OCD. These conditions are comorbid in a sense. A lot of people suffer mm-hmm. from both. You know, if I direct that person to go listen to that podcast, hypothetically, I am getting a chunk of that advertising. And like, mm-hmm. is that unethical as a physician? You know, I'm a medical student now. So it's like, does it change once I'm a physician? Should I not run any ads on the podcast and formulate this weird thing I'm trying to do in a more like Patreon kind of way, or just eat the cost, or like, I don't know.
Yeah, that's difficult, because I mean, I think your overall goal is to spread awareness and to, you know, make people feel like there's a community behind this and that this is, you know, and normalize it. I mean, I know one thing I feel like I've learned from you, even though I was already pretty good at this, but even more, is just don't be afraid to be who you are, because I think that really plays out and it could be a big strength of yours. So yeah, I don't, you know, that's a good question. I don't know. I mean, I think if I were you, I'd just reach out to other people who've done this in their career and see what like worked for them. Maybe, I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the world of physician podcasters, I don't know too many others. You're essentially a physician podcaster, basically.
Basically,
yeah,
I know.
Third episode in. Well, let's get to the meat of this conversation. So we wanted to talk about kind of our sort of depression. So, you know, let me ask at least you first. You've lived with ADHD and OCD for quite some time, but since we've last talked, you talked about a pretty significant period of depression in your life.
Yeah. So last year, third year, you know, I am a people person. And so I really do enjoy third and fourth year in terms of getting out and meeting patients and learning that way. But it does start to wear on you to be the new kid all the time, figure out where you can use the bathroom, where you can go eat lunch, how to get to where you're going to go, meet your new preceptor. And then also, you know, always kind of having to be smiling and enjoying everything because they're writing letters for your letter that'll go to residencies. And I think that started to grow on me a little bit last year or wear me down a little bit last year. Also, you know, first and second year is really hard because you're always, you know, studying for tests, but at least you're with a cohort of people going through the exact same thing mm-hmm. as you, whereas third and fourth year is a little bit more isolating. I'm in an area where at least there's seven other students in my area, so we could kind of lean on each other, but often people are doing their own thing. And so it was super rainy last year, as it is this year, but mm-hmm. I actually lost 30 pounds because my depression got so bad. And that was concerning because, you know, if you had a patient come up to you and say, hey, I've lost 30 pounds in the past 3 months unintentionally, you're like, ooh, that's a red flag for cancer. So I actually ended up getting a colonoscopy, and that was a whole nother story.
Oh, man.
Okay. Propofol is great. And getting cleaned.
Let's just, cleaning the pipes.
Cleaning the pipe.
So I guess let's just pause here, you know, because you're a very smart person, you know, very, very emotionally intelligent, I would say too, of course. You know, in the heat of that depression that you described, you know, you talked about the weight loss, but what else, like, did it really look like for you, like, in those moments?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, it's kind of struggling to get up and go to work every day. I know that I didn't do as well on that rotation. Actually, I did okay in the the people sense, because that's something that brings me joy. I was on pediatrics, I really love kids. But the actual taking my tests, I failed my peds, whatever those were called, COMAT.
Yeah, shelf things.
I just could not get my head in the game. I couldn't get into it. So that was another way it showed. And then a big thing for me is just my OCD got worse. So I'm depressed, but also, you know, I live with my parents right now because I'm saving money, but I was driving my mom especially crazy with some of my rituals, you know, not being able to sit by myself at the table, going on and flicking lights on and off, and just kind of not being there 100% mentally. And it got to the point where we had several arguments about her wanting me to go back to therapy. And that was hard to hear. So it actually took COVID to kind of convince me to go take care of it. If that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. It does. It does.
And yeah. So I know I'm going on a long ramble, but basically one thing that I have found that when I stop going to therapy and then I need to get back into it, it's hard to find a therapist
that
you like and that you can afford and all this stuff. And so you already have a barrier there. I know that for me, finding a specific therapist that does OCD type work is also hard because, yeah, you're depressed, but sometimes you need a specific kind of like exposure response prevention therapy or dialectical behavioral therapy. There's different things that I like was kind of looking for in my therapist and just was not making time for it. And then right before we got pulled off rotations in mid-March, I was actually on an ER rotation, another ER rotation, and there was a social worker at like 2 a.m. trying to place a schizophrenic patient. And I said, you know what? I appreciate the work you do. I like, because social workers, honestly, social workers everywhere deserve a clap because the job is super hard and I think it's pretty thankless and I appreciate what social workers do. But anyway, I was chatting with him and he told me that he was also a therapist. And I was like, oh, really? What kind of insurance do you take? And he said, just private, but I used to work for this one group. And he gave me a group of that takes Medicaid because I'm currently on Medicaid because I don't make any money yet because I'm a med student. And I didn't know about that place. My PCP office didn't know about it or didn't tell me about it. And so basically what happened is once we got a break from class because of COVID, I called the number and they got me in within the next month, not only for therapy, but also with an ARMP, a psych ARMP to help me with my medications. And then I also started going to group therapy for dialectical behavioral therapy again. And that was incredible. And I'm no longer doing group therapy because my schedule got crazy, but I'm still seeing a therapist about once every 10 days. And even though I feel this is normally the part where I would be like, okay, I don't think I need therapy anymore. I think I've realized through this that it's good to have a therapist in your background for, you know, your back pocket for a rainy day.
Yeah. So. Yeah. And I always think like, you know, changing the frequency up or down is, I think, really one of the healthiest ways to look at it and never necessarily completely eliminating that. But that being said, like I haven't seen a therapist in a long time, but I definitely still want to get back in. And so I'm glad you talked about like kind of just the barriers that it was challenging at first. And like, how does a family med PCP, primary care doctor, not know about like any of these psych places kind of in an area? And that just seems so commonplace. Like a lot of people just don't know who's taking patients, who takes what insurance. And yeah, I mean, in my experience talking with just a lot of different people, it seems like everyone has to wait at least a couple months to get...
And now the weather. Expect partly cloudy skies with an excellent chance of maximum refunds. Wait, that can't be right.
Oh, but it is.
Who are you?
I'm April. And we could see refunds raining down all tax season with people switching to TaxAct.
TaxAct?
The tax filing software that makes it easy to file for less and get more.
New forecast. It's sunny days ahead for everyone using TaxAct.
Always happy to brighten your day. TaxAct. Switch to TaxAct today and start for free.
See TaxAct.com for details.
And to see somebody.
Yeah. And you know, when you go into primary care office, often people just hand you a list and they're like, good luck. And I mean, I get it. They're busy. I mean, I'm going to be one of those people, but, yeah. You know, it's when you are suffering from mental health, one of the last things you want to do is get on phone calls. Cause I know for me, it's even hard to just pick up the phone and make a phone call to admit that I need help. And so when you call places, they don't get back to you. Mm. It's the wrong number. They're not taking people. It's really easy to just give up because you're like, well, I don't want to do this anyway.
So what did then this process kind of look like? Because I know you made some changes. I kind of want to hear about this group therapy because like how did group therapy work during times of COVID? Was it just like a Zoom virtual group therapy?
Yeah, it was Zoom virtual group therapy. So, I mean, that's been one of the crazy things also about COVID is I've actually never met my therapist in person. And I know at first I was a little bit resistant to that, but I honestly love it because I don't have to get in the car. I don't have to wait anxiously in the waiting room. I literally am like, oh, it's 3:29. My appointment's at 3:30. Gotta go. Yeah. Go do it from wherever. And it's really nice. But yeah, so my group therapy was like once a week for about an hour and a half, and we all are on Zoom. And it actually works pretty well. I mean, we like go through worksheets together and screen share like what we're going through. You know, we take turns sharing. It was helpful for me because a lot of people at the mental health facility I'm working with actually are often court ordered to get mental health services through it, a lot of substance use disorder. Mm-hmm. And it was actually helpful for me to see how far some of these other people had come in the group, hearing their stories. And it actually was very inspiring for me to be like, wow, if these people used to be selling heroin on the street and now they're here and they have a job and they've like worked, they've brought themselves out of like some pretty rough situations. At least for me, that's one thing that helps me is, in, you know, getting inspired by others to be like, wow, if they can do that, I can do that. I'm, yeah. You know, my own version of that. So yeah, it was really nice, especially during COVID. Cause you know, we had all these, I mean, it still is COVID, but we had, you know, I would get on to my virtual class and then I could go on to my virtual therapy. So it just, it allowed me to really spend the time on my mental health that I didn't have when I was out on rotations.
Yeah, no, that's super cool. I love group therapy. I haven't had a chance to do it myself since I was initially diagnosed, but then I would always go to these community bipolar and depression support groups. And there wasn't a professional there, but I do just think like that environment of seeing different severities of illness is very therapeutic in its own right, you know, and I know it's not always perfect. You know, sometimes other people there can affect you negatively rather than positively. Yeah. For sure. But I really want to make sure that's used in my future practice, you know, and really emphasized. That's awesome that you participated in that. So what you also, you know, you saw your a psychiatric nurse practitioner, I imagine, and yes, you made some changes there too.
Yeah. So my OCD got really bad when I was about 19 or 20 years old. So that was back in like 2009. And so I was put on Prozac back then, and then I weaned myself off of it. And then before we started medical school in 2017, I started getting anxious again. So I started it again. And then, it's interesting, you know, it's tricky to figure out the right meds sometimes, right? So they actually, you know, there's this one I had thought about trying called anafrenil, which is a tricyclic antidepressant, which means it has a little bit more side effects, a little bit stronger. But there's one that was specifically engineered for OCD back in the day. So I asked my psych R&P about it, and she was like, I don't think you're that severe. So I was like, okay. So then we just upped my Prozac up to 40 milligrams from 20, and that actually helped a ton. I did have the GeneSight therapy thing done.
Oh, where you
swab your mouth, and based on your genetics, they'll tell you which SSRI or whatnot would work the best for you.
Yeah, it's more than just SSRIs. It will tell you all of them. Yeah.
Yeah, mood stabilizers, benzodiazepines, all that stuff. And I think it can be really helpful for some people. For me, it told me the one that I was on was the least effective, and it has been helpful. So I think being able to interpret the kind of the graph that they give you can be a little bit difficult. So my R&P, she did explain to me that, well, maybe it's red, meaning it doesn't work as well, just because you actually have levels of Prozac in your blood because you've been taking it for so long. And so maybe it just, She explained it to me.
You know what you should think about? Because I asked the same question to a psychiatrist I was working with. And he said, Logan, treat the patient, not the piece of paper. He goes, just because some damn piece of paper tells you that this medicine isn't working well, does that patient tell you it's working well for them? Okay, you listen to them. Because we had a very similar situation. That's very funny. So So you upped your Prozac and like what changes did you start to see and how long?
Yeah. So Prozac, I was originally started on when I was 19, 20, because, you know, as you know, but our listeners may not know, it's one of the longer half-lives. So especially when you're a teenager, if you forget to take it or whatever, you're less likely to have side effects right away if you, you know, stop it cold turkey. And it worked for me when I was 19, 20. So that's how I decided to restart that one in 2017. And so again, we just went up and yeah, it makes me feel more in control. Like I can notice it. I know not everybody is a huge fan of SSRIs, but for me, it has been helpful. Actually recently, I've been feeling better. So I actually started to try to wean myself off a little bit and I could feel the effects. So now I'm continuing to take my 40 milligrams. So, you know, it's a nice tool to have. I mean, it's a nice thing that it is long half-life, or if for some reason I, you know, don't get my meds called in on time or I forget, it's not like I'm about to have a seizure or have a heart thing or anything like that. It's like, okay. But it's been really good for me, and it's nice to have a psych R&P to like check in with every once in a while to talk about it. And you know, it's also nice as a medical student because they like talking to you about, you know, what you're going through. And then it's also helpful because now when I give patients GAD-7 scores or PHQ-9 scores, which are the scores we use when people come in with anxiety and depression, you know, I've been asked those myself. And so, you know, it's nice to be able to have that conversation with your patients. Mm-hmm. And know what they're kind of going through, and then also be able to clarify, okay, so what does this mean to you that you're not sleeping well? What does that look like for you? Or like wanting to hurt yourself, what does that look like for you or whatever?
I meant to ask you this, you know, 10 minutes ago or so, but I kind of forgot. So, you know, you're, like I said, a very like emotionally intelligent person, you know, smart person. When you had that incredible drop of weight, you weren't able to recognize at all that it could potentially be depression, or did you think it was depression at that stage, but you wanted to kind of figure out if it was anything else funky kind of thing? Like, I guess, what was that process like?
Yeah, good question. So I had a lot of diarrhea. So this is funny that you asked me that. So I was on my peds rotation. And for those of you who have ever been on a peds rotation, often you get sick because kids are full of germs. And so I was pretty sick for 6 weeks with something that was could have been COVID, who knows? It was before COVID was here, but I had diarrhea, cough, almost needed an inhaler, fevers, that type of thing. And conjunctivitis, that was another weird thing I had. So I did have some sort of pathology going on at that time. I mean, I could have told you a lot of it had to do with my depression because this is often how that looks for me. But then when it kind of kept persisting for a while, I ended up getting like stool samples, all of that. You know, I also served in the Peace Corps a couple years ago. So I was wondering if, you know, I had any leftover friends who were living in my gut. And then we also have a family history of colon cancer as well. Not that I was super worried about it, but, you know, it's like, So I went and saw a GI doc and he was super cool. You would have liked him. Literally, I finally got my colonoscopy in May because of COVID. You know, they didn't do procedures for a while. And he was like, well, how are you doing now? I'm like, I'm doing better since we, you know, took some time off for COVID. He's like, okay, I have one prescription for you. And I was like, what's that? And it was a book by John Kabat-Zinn, who's like a monk, on like how to meditate. That was literally like what I was like discharged from my colonoscopy with. So, I mean, he took me seriously. I definitely felt he took me seriously, everything like that. But he was like, you know, I think you're just a stressed out med student. And he was correct for this particular case. So, but it's a good learning opportunity as a future physician. It's just like, you know, I definitely have experienced firsthand, and also with patients of mine, you know, how much body and mind are connected. And so I think taking into that account, but also being like, you know, if there wasn't this psych component, you know, somebody losing 30 pounds in like 3 months, like that's something you do need to look into.
So you have to do your due diligence. But it is just kind of crazy to me how often like mental symptoms manifest in your GI tract, whether that's because there's all the serotonin receptors in your mm-hmm. GI tract, or through maybe just other mechanisms throughout the body. You know, like I really wonder how much of GI doctors, when they stick cameras either down our throats or up our ass, is related to mental health reasons. And I guess, you know, I get it that we have to make sure it's something not scary. But I had an endoscopy, so that's a camera down your throat.
Okay.
For listeners. When my depression was really bad years ago, 10 years ago, more than 10 years ago, 12 years ago. You know, but I was also drinking like an idiot at that point in my life too. So definitely the heartburn and the tremendous, but I remember feeling very stressed and having manifestations of heartburn as well. And so I really wonder if you've kind of had something similar, but going out the other end.
Yeah, no, it's interesting. I mean, and like, you know, that's one thing for irritable bowel syndrome, right? Is, one of the like criteria to have that. I mean, it's an you don't have colon cancer or Crohn's disease or anything, but part of it is having a psych history, honestly, yeah. One of the things, and often it can be constipation based or diarrhea based. So no, I agree. I mean, I think, it's interesting to be on the patient side of it. Then also when you're talking with your patients, like, I at least now know how to.
Finding the right person for the job isn't easy. Just ask someone who hired a lounge singer to be their office receptionist.
Hello, this is Mickey Marquis, and you've reached the office of Duggan Associates. Thank you very much. Catch me Tuesday nights at the Hotel Johnson. Hello?
But if you've got an insurance question, you can always count on your local GEICO agent. They can bundle your policies, which could save you hundreds.
Duggan Associates, this is Mickey Marquis. Hello?
For expert help with all your insurance needs, visit geico.com/local today.
You coming to bed, hon?
Yep, honey, I'll be right there. Just got to turn out the light. Ow! Ow!
Ow! Ah! Ah! Some things never change. Ow. Like your kids always leaving tiny toys on the floor for you to step on. Ow. And GEICO saving folks lots of money on their car insurance.
Sweetie, I think I left the downstairs light on.
Please don't make me go.
15 minutes could save you 15% or more.
I do good abdominal pain workups and, you know, And so like for you, you were saying that you've been, you know, been a little bit more depressed recently. How's that looked for you? And like, when did that kind of, this episode kind of start for you?
Yeah. Did you have your hand over the microphone for a second? Did you think? Either way, you just moved your hand and it became louder and I think it sounds good.
Okay, good. I'll keep my hand here then.
Okay. Yeah. So your question about, yeah. And thank you for sharing, you know, so much about your kind of experience with depression and, you know, just, I guess, so the listeners understand, like you, before we started recording, you were talking about how, like, you're a healthy weight again, you know, like, you know, depression, OCD, ADHD, you know, you're never cured. You never figured it all out, but it seems like you're in a better place than you were.
Oh, you know, and I can tell not only because I've gained some pounds back, but also just the way my mind feels. I know that my therapist has noticed a huge difference. And actually, I mean, we can keep talking about me too. But one thing about mental health is, you know, like we were saying, it's a chronic condition. And so right now I would say I'm, you know, at a lull, aka better place, like a more manageable place, which is awesome. And it's really easy when you get to these manageable places to be like, okay, I think I'm good. I can start weaning off my meds. I don't need as much therapy. But for me with my OCD, I know that there will be other times in my life where it gets bad again, because that's the way it goes. So one thing I'm working on with my therapist right now is like how to prophylactically come up with a plan for when things get bad again, and what to do in those situations. Because there are some situations where that's going to be, or I know one thing for me as a woman, if I ever decide to have kids, that can be a huge thing in pregnancy with hormone switches and everything in terms of mental health. That's one thing I've thought about. And then also with OCD, I mean, eventually I need to, and I've started to do this, is the exposure response prevention, where you like really hit on hard the things that you're scared about. And when last fall, when I was so depressed, I was not in a place where I could hit those head on. Like it would not have been possible. And now that I'm doing better, it's easier to like try to really tackle the things that I'm afraid of and the things that are at the root of my OCD. It's not easy, but it's easier because I'm in a like better place mentally.
I think that's a great way to put it. It's not easy, but it's easier because I'm in a great place mentally. I think that, you know, and I wanted to make sure before we started diving into my experience with depression that we, you know, made sure that, you know, the listener understands that you are definitely doing better. And it's super cool to see like the steps you've taken. And yeah, so going back to your question, you know, yeah, so kind of things that I've been going through, it's almost tough to say exactly what's caused some of my depression symptoms. And I just think it's a kind of a combination of a bunch of things. You know, for me, my depression, I wish my depression involved losing weight. It involves more gaining weight. And so in a world of COVID where we live, where, you know, gyms are closing, I enjoyed cycling over the summer. So like that was one way that I was doing really well with my weight. But, you know, once the weather kind of dips a little bit more kind of thing, it just makes it that much harder. And so also kind of adding into that, like, I feel like COVID, for me, my depression when I was in Scotland, when I first experienced severe depression, you know me, I'm very much similar to you, very social. I like being around people. That's part of my identity, I guess, in a sense. But in that depression originally, I would isolate, I wouldn't talk to people, I would just stay all by myself. And now we live in COVID where you basically are staying by yourself. You aren't talking to anybody, you're isolating. And, you know, we can get through that through some means with virtual like this, but, you know, so I found it much harder to exercise the way I wanted to. The sun's going down a lot earlier, a lot less sunlight. I can't go on those same bike rides for either weather or sunlight reasons. I can't see people. And then also kind of this element of stress, which for me and many people with bipolar disorder, stress is one of the great destabilizers in a sense, you know, and the stress of applying to medical residency, the stress of interviewing, auditioning, you know, it's been fun experiences still nonetheless, but still very, very stressful. And, you know, I find myself thinking, where am I going to match? Where should I rank? All these things. And just these kind of spinning kind of anxious thoughts that, you know, an element of anxiety is good for me. Like I want to have these thoughts, but then I can't turn it off. And sleeping is that much harder. And sleeping's not that much harder when I'm not exercising the way I would most prefer kind of thing. So it's like this cycle of all these different things outside of my control. Some of it is a little bit inside my control, but there's all these challenges that, you know, what am I experiencing depression because of my bipolar disorder? Am I experiencing depression because of COVID? I think the answer is a little bit of both. And for me, you know, I'm trying to take steps in the right direction and move things forward. And one thing that I've found, at least in my experience, when I do disclose that I am experiencing symptoms of depression, I have a great circle of friends around me, you know, yourself including, but my family, my friends. You know, a lot of people know that I went, of course, to the psych ward. I was an inpatient, I was in an inpatient unit. So I think their mind immediately goes, oh shit, you know, like, is Logan going to do something crazy, stupid, you know, when he says he's depressed, which it's not to that level. Like, and it's like, I see where they're coming from, but like, it's also like, I feel like because I have bipolar disorder, maybe a more severe, I don't know, in a sense, that's at least my perception. And maybe that perception is wrong, but that's at least my experience, my personal experience.
And it's hard, right? Because there's a certain amount of like, is this, you know, my bipolar, is this my OCD? But I also think, it's hard to be a fourth year medical student, you know, applying to residency and doing all this. I mean, I think, you know, my peers in our class that don't have a quote mental disorder of, you know, a labeled one, you know, they've been experiencing the same kind of like depression, anxiety in terms of just like, is this going to be okay? And so it is hard because it's like, how much is it like me and what I've been through? I do know that I feel like I have pretty good coping mechanisms because I've had to go through this before. I know what it feels like to feel out of control because I've been there before. I'm not a stranger to that. But also like, I mean, what you're saying is like, I mean, I think it's pretty normal to be feeling what you've been feeling about with COVID and applying and not exercising and sleeping. I mean, I think that's, you know, I think anybody could be saying that same story. But I do know that, like, for me, how it manifests, my anxiety and depression manifests as more OCD rituals or whatever. And maybe, I don't know how it is for you and with your bipolar disorder, but like, it does look slightly different than my classmates or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I also think, you know, part of my bipolar disorder is my pursuit of becoming a psychiatrist. You know, I feel like mm-hmm. it gives me purpose. It feels, you know, it gives me drive. And so for so much of my identity, I feel like I think of myself as a medical student and soon to be a physician. And so, you know, this summer and through our experience in COVID, you know, being a medical student during COVID has not been the most fun, not what I signed up for, you know, not really all that cool. Now thankfully we're getting back into the hospital, you know, over the last few months. And so it's getting back to some more sense of normalcy. But so when you go through a shitty medical experience, medical school experience, that is, and so much of my identity is tied up in being a medical student, I felt shitty about myself, you know? Mm-hmm. And so what I'm trying to really remind myself through this experience of depression, it's like, no matter what, I have to put my health first. And then I can figure it out. Then I know I can be a really good doctor. And I still have, of course, all the utmost confidence that I can. But, you know, putting my health first is going to just allow me to weather this storm that I know is going to be a Category 5 hurricane kind of thing. And, you know, the how many changes are we going to deal with as doctors? You know, there's going to be another COVID at some point, I guarantee, before we, you know, it's just, we're going to have to probably do something like this. And hopefully we can be part of a medical system that handles it better. But, you know, what I'm trying to say is I tried to focus on the lessons that I learned when I left the psych ward. And so I've been trying to meditate more often. I still struggle to meditate every day. It's just not something that I, you know, it's just hard. It's like, you know, it's something I know that's good for me, but I still just don't do it every day. And I'm trying to, like, part of my depression, part of my, this whole experience is frustration with weight. You know, I take a pill, Depakote it's called, Valproate is the generic name. For anyone who's a medical student, nursing student, whoever, you will get a question under your tests. What's the most common side effect of Valproate? Weight gain. It's like, and so I, you know, part of my depression is gaining weight, and then I'm taking this pill that's notoriously making me heavier. And so I've had all these like kind of inner dialogues. Is this the right pill for me? Is this the right time to switch? What should I be doing? Is this, you know? Mm-hmm. And so what I've really learned, and with great deliberation, you know, with my friends and with my wife, you know, I think I also can take a more holistic stance to where I am in life, you know, making a change to Depakote, you know, right when I enter residency is, I don't think the smartest idea, you know, like, you know, I've been doing well for so long, you know, don't fricking rock the boat, idiot, you know, like steady the course. And so I've now tried Noom. Have you ever heard of Noom?
Oh, I have. It's come up on my Instagram.
I'll have to send you, a $20 off thingy, because I've now done it for 2 weeks. I've lost no weight. But I'm going to stick with it. You heard it here first on Talk Mental Health podcast. Cause I like that it's a dieting app that has a lot to do with psychology. So I'm like, okay, I need to give this thing a shot. Yeah. I did the typical weight loss thing. I lost 4 pounds in the first 5 days. I felt great about myself, had a good old weekend. And then I came back on Monday morning fatter than when I started. So, you know, this is the never ending cycle of a fat man who enjoys eating and IPAs, you know, it's a challenge. And, you know, I know I probably ranted there for 20 minutes or so, or however long it was, felt like 20 minutes. But I think sometimes with my podcast, I have a lot of people on and I don't even share enough of my own personal experience. And so, you know, I'm really glad you're here today, Megan, because it's super fun to talk about my personal experiences with someone who I know really well. You know, we're great friends. I respect you, you know.
Yeah.
So thank you.
Well, thank you. I mean, anytime. I mean, I think you know, even though I, you know, I view you as somebody who's been super open about your mental health and you seem like outwardly like you got all your shit together all the time. I mean, I know for me, I don't feel like I have my shit together all the time. And it's important to like remember that, like, yeah, even though you've gone through a lot and learned a lot about yourself and what you're dealing with and what you're, you know, going through, you know, you're allowed to fall down and have your friends help you pick you back up. And you're absolutely right that we're, you know, our number one patients. And sometimes, you know, we need to remind each other that like, that's important to step back and do what you need to do to help yourself.
We're not doctors first, we're people first. Mm-hmm. Like they're, you know, I don't know. We are not our profession. You know, you are a human who has a beating heart, who is meant to, you know, enjoy this world. And mm-hmm. you know, whether that's through, you know, skiing, hanging out with friends, lovemaking, you know, either way, it's all a balance, but it has to add up to being happy. Because if it's not adding up to being happy, something's wrong in that equation. And so I really had to kind of take a step back and, you know, medical school this past year, it's crazy to basically think about how long it's been since COVID mm-hmm. has impacted our medical school experience. Has been not only of course hard on us, but everyone, you know, I know everyone can relate to whatever they are doing in life. It's had a probably negative dip because of COVID. So I think I know, you know, there's a lot of people out there who like me, who like you, have experienced some means of depression in this past 12 months.
Yeah. And I think some people, I think it's been an interesting, I know at the beginning of COVID, I definitely felt like this less now, but like, I think it's been interesting to see some of my family and friends who haven't officially gone through depression, AKA like they haven't started any medication, they haven't been to a therapist, and how much sometimes this has been almost harder for them in some ways, because some people are not used to feeling out of control. And so like, I actually think some of my friends who have a history of depression, anxiety, dealt with this whole pandemic situation better because they've felt out of control before and they have some better techniques for dealing with that. And I don't know if that's universally true, but that's one thing I noticed, especially at the beginning, was like, yeah, I'm used to feeling like, what the fuck is happening all the time? And like,
yeah.
I feel like I'm not in charge. And like, you know, I have some friends that haven't dealt with that as much. I mean, I think we all have to a certain extent. So anyway. Uh-huh.
Now through February 16th, join a clean and spacious Planet Fitness for zero enrollment and only $10 a month. With tons of equipment and free fitness training, it's the perfect place for everybody to work out.
Even me, Mr. I can't sleep at night, so I keep dozing off during the day.
Especially you, Snoozy. You'll rest easier and feel fit-tacular.
Wait, how did you get in here?
Join in club or at planetfitness.com. Zero enrollment, $10 a month, cancel anytime. Hurry, deal ends February 16th. See club for details.
Apps. I mean, I just remember being in the psych ward especially, and I just kept thinking, how in the hell did I end up here? Like, what decisions did I make? How did I do this wrong? How am I in this inpatient psych ward right now? Like, this is so weird. Like, I remember like laughing to myself, like God, like just punched me in the nuts, you know, like I'm not even religious, but like, I was just like, I would try to laugh about these things and be like, okay, I have to live with this now. God threw me a curveball. You know, I don't know. And I feel like almost everyone can relate to that right now, you know, like whether you're religious or not, you know, it doesn't really matter. Life just threw us every, you know, 7 billion of us a curveball, you know? Yeah. And so, like you said, I think like people who have been thrown a curveball before have those coping mechanisms in place, and they at least have some tools in their toolbox that can maybe be applicable to this weird, odd moment in history where, you know, Americans attack the Capitol, you know, it's just another Tuesday or Wednesday, like, dear Lord, cool. You know, it's just like, this is, yeah, it's scary that I, you know, I feel myself personally getting numb to the news. It's like mm-hmm. nothing shocking anymore. And it's been very odd for me to, you know, because part of my bipolar disorder depression, you know, manic depression, I prefer the word manic depression, by the way. I want to start bringing it back. Right. But, you know, whatever. You know, I still haven't even become a resident physician here yet. But
close.
Yeah. Well, I can't even remember what I was rambling about here. We've had
something about feeling out of control with the pandemic. I think I can't remember either.
I don't know, Megan. We've been talking. We chatted like 30 minutes before we hopped on. We've been chatting. It's 9:20 something now. We've been chatting a while. I think we could continue to have a great podcast whenever we chat. And I hope we continue to do this throughout the remainder of our careers, because I hope these conversations can just serve as some means of any kind of value to our future patients. You know, we're both going to be treating patients with OCD, ADHD, and depression and bipolar disorder. Both of us.
Bipolar disorder.
Yeah. Although we're manic depression disorder. Although we're, you know, you're pursuing family medicine, I'm pursuing psychiatry. We're going to have definitely some different experiences. I will not be cutting any babies out of any uteruses. You will. Good luck.
I'm excited.
But yeah, I mean, I have the utmost confidence that you are going to be a wonderful, wonderful physician. So cheers to that.
Cheers to that. Well, and you as well. I mean, like I said, I've already started referring your podcast to other people.
Yeah.
You know, keep coming out with things. Cause I think, and also just for the mental health of our colleagues too, I think that's a big thing that I think you've helped start the roll the ball with that, which I think is super important. Cause I know that's one thing I hope we can help improve in our careers is just physicians themselves being more vulnerable. Cause I know several people that don't ever want to talk about their mental health, which is totally fair. But I think trying to change that.
Is it?
I mean,
I think it's stupid. Stupid. You know, I want to take a harsh stance that I think it's malpractice to be a physician who feels that way about mental health. I really do. What if I said, okay, your chest hurts, don't go in. You know, I'd be liable for malpractice. And so I think we have to, as physicians, model ourselves where we are willing to talk about it. Cause how can we expect our patients to do any differently? You know, I mean, part of where I'm coming from is, you know, I'm going to be putting all of my future, not all, I shouldn't say all, a lot of my future patients on medications that are going to make them fat. Obesity is already a huge problem in America, right? Mm-hmm. And the world. I am one of those patients who's on medication and fat. So who the hell am I to talk to patients about being better and healthier to their bodies, trying to curb obesity and cardiovascular disease, when my fat ass over here is 40 pounds overweight? You know, I think us as physicians, we need to put our health first. And I really think that's one of the most simplistic ways to change our healthcare system fundamentally, is like thinking about the healthiest people should be the physicians and the nurses. We should be like looking to them for advice. Like, how do we live like a healthy life kind of thing?
Yeah.
Rant ended.
No, I know. I feel like we could have a whole another discussion on this, but yes, I agree. I mean, yeah, I'm definitely not perfect by any means. So, trying to figure out the best way to get people to talk about it, especially as physicians. I mean, geez, we go through this shit stuff, and yeah, we need to be able to talk about it. So,
yeah. Well, enjoy your Tuesday evening. This was super fun, Megan, as it always is. We'll do a follow-up, hopefully sooner than later.
Sounds like a plan. So thanks, Logan. You're the best.
The I didn't realize you liked me that way deal. Because it's one thing to receive McDonald's, but an entirely other thing to know that they woke up early to face the world and bring you McDonald's breakfast still hot in the bag.
Appreciate you.
There's a deal for every morning. Now grab two loaded sausage burritos for only $3. Prices and participation may vary. Single item at regular price. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.